It's all about a relationship economy. Everything moves so fast, but at our heart, we want to make a connection with somebody. We don't want to just be sold. We don't want to be pitched. We don't want to feel like somebody's taking advantage of us. We want to actually become partners and like learn and grow and do something together. That's why, you know, coaches are on the rise, because people don't want to go to college and learn from somebody that doesn't have any experience. We want to pay somebody that's actually been through the trenches and came out on top of the mountaintops.
This is the Angles of Latitude podcast, session number 123 with real estate investor coach Whitney Nicely.
This is squadron leader confirming hostiles inbound. Prepare for battle.
What you're about to hear is the integration of life.
Clarity is power.
If you live each day as if it was your last, someday you'll most certainly be right.
Liberty.
We choose to go to the moon.
It's happening.
And all things geek.
Yeah, I'm not sure I know how to answer that.
You got a badass over here.
Welcome to the Angles of Latitude podcast.
Hey, girls and guys, welcome back to the AOL podcast. I'm your host, JC Preston, and really excited to have you along for today's session. If this is the first time you're listening in, this is the show where we bring you life lessons or a message from successful entrepreneurs, experts, and artists to help you find and execute your own personal mission and live a lifestyle that you're proud of. This is a really cool session that I'm happy to bring to you guys today. You know, many of us are familiar with Rich Dad, Poor Dad by Robert Kiyosaki. And if you've read more than that book of Robert's, you start to realize that he made a good part of his income through real estate. And for so many people, when we think about real estate, you know, it's something that you probably have to have lots of money for, especially if you want to make it a passive income-based business. However, that's not exactly the case, as you're going to be finding out with today's guest. Whitney Nicely started out her career in a day job just like most of us, but she soon realized that the 9-to-5 world wasn't for her. This realization came after she bought her first acre property for just $1,200. That soon snowballed into other opportunities, and today she's sharing with us a few of the things that helped her more than replace the income from her day job. Specifically in this session, we'll be talking about advice that she'd give to people just starting out, what pitfalls to avoid as a beginner, and an overall strategy for anyone interested in buying rental properties, no matter what their experience is. This session is made possible by ClickFunnels. You know, it's 2018 and getting an online business is easier than ever before. You just have to know a few key components to get started. And as you'll hear in today's interview with Whitney, she's all about empowering women to get into real estate investing. She's super, super passionate about it. Question is, what are you passionate about that could help hundreds, if not thousands, of people? Chances are you're an expert at something, and something that people would pay to have your help with. If you believe now is the time to get your message out, then there's a good book that I recommend called Expert Secrets by Russell Brunson. In it, he fills us in on a lot of knowledge that leading experts utilize in their marketing, branding, and message design. And if you want to know if you're going about things the right way, then I would recommend, again, checking out this free book today. All you have to do is go over to newinceptions.com/expertsecrets, and you'll only have to pay shipping and handling. Again, that link is newinceptions.com/expertsecrets. Don't forget to subscribe to the show on CastBox, iTunes, or whatever you're listening to podcasts with these days. Personally, I recommend CastBox as it has a great commenting system. And of course, I'd love to hear your guys' input on how we're doing. As usual, show notes and show note extras of this conversation can be found at newinceptions.com/123. And I'll be on after the show to fill you in on anything we might have missed. Welcome back to the show, everyone. JC here. Hope you're having an awesome day. Truly believe that today's chat is going to add some awesomeness to the day you're already having. Today, I'm speaking with someone that I'm really excited to have on the show. And, you know, the thing is that, you know, I'm interested to know more about real estate investing. You know, it's a way that, you know, one of my favorite authors, Robert Kiyosaki, made his fortunes through. And, you know, I've heard from plenty of online marketers that, You know, it's the way to create real ongoing revenue. Today's guest is someone who started her journey back in 2013 working a desk job which paid $24,000 a year. And like Lewis Howes, found herself sleeping on her family's couch, and specifically it was her parents' couch. Today, though, she owns more than $2.5 million in real estate assets. And you know what else? One of her most memorable deals was when she spent $1,500 on a piece of raw land, which today brings her $10,000 a year. That's just one piece of property. So pretty cool, huh? Today's guest is Queen of Real Estate Investing in East Tennessee, Whitney Nicely, who can be found around the web via her name, Whitney Nicely. Whitney, welcome to the show. How you doing?
Hey, JC. Thanks for having me. This is going to be fun.
Great to have you on. And like I said, really excited to have you here. So yeah, I mean, wow. Like, what is that? 5 years. 5 years, and you've come from that distance. I mean, that heck of a nice accomplishment. Congratulations.
Thank you. But, you know, it took a lot of banging my head against the wall and trying to figure things out and persistence, but I made it. You know, a lot of people are looking at the next 40 years till they can retire, and I managed to do it in five. So it's an amazing, amazing life, and you can do it too. Anybody can do it.
Yeah. And, this is such a topic that so many people, I mean, this is just one of those things that is reachable by everybody, I think. And, you know, I've always been kind of curious about the topic, you know, and I guess you say not reachable, but more relevant, because everybody has to live somewhere and they're like, well, how do I become that person that, you know, owns the house? And, you know, that's more straightforward thinking than, you know, someone that's going to be going into internet marketing and having to learn all the tools of doing everything that's online. As I was saying, you know, a lot of thought leaders and internet marketers, you know, they eventually buy real estate to make their passive income even more passive. Traditionally, when you're thinking about a 9-to-5 worker, lots of times they're too busy trading hours for dollars to even think straight, you know, let alone get into something that a lot of people really is, they think is for the wealthy. Yeah, it's at arm's length, but it's just out of arm's length because they don't think that they have enough money to get into the game. How did you get into it yourself? What was your first deal like? And was it a group buy, or you know, how did things get going for you?
I am totally self-funded in all my deals. If I put any money out, it was actually my money that I put out, because my mom has always been a real estate investor. I mean, since I can remember, you know, she's been a real estate investor, and that was how she would buy houses. She would save up a bunch of money and buy a house and then rent it out, and eventually she'd get her money back. Right. But, you know, we'd be living on that passive income. She didn't, you know, keep track of it, or like she kept track of making sure it was paying, but not how long it would take to actually make her money back. So I thought that's kind of how you got into real estate. You had to have money and you had to buy stuff at a bargain and rent it back out. So I was actually hanging out at a real estate auction on Saturday mornings, because luck doesn't just happen. Right. You have to be prepared and you have to be in the right place at the right time. Watching cartoons on a Saturday morning is probably not going to land you a real estate deal, but going to a real estate auction could get you into a real estate deal. And that's what happened to me that Saturday. I was at an auction. We had like 90 properties, and it was mostly vacant land. We were going county by county and selling off these chunks of land, chunks of dirt. We got to the L counties, and I was like, I think they just paid $500 for that acre of land. Did that just happen? And I like asked people around me and they were like, yeah, totally. And I was like, you can buy land for $500? They were like, yeah, they just bought some. And I was like, maybe I should buy some. And then we got into the M counties, and one of my buddies was bidding, and I ran up to him in between. And I was like, what is this? What are we bidding on? Like, where is this land? And he was like, just buy the next lot. And I was like, nah, dude, like, I'm not prepared. I don't have any money with me. I don't know where this is. He said, buy the next lot. So I did. I raised my hand. Before the auctioneer even started bidding, I just raised my hand. And somebody bid against me. I bid again. We went back and forth a couple different times. And finally, the auctioneer said, all right, Whit, you got it. You won. And I was like, how much did I pay? They said $1,200. So I paid $1,200 for my first acre of land. It's an established subdivision that actually went under during the recession. So there's sidewalks, there's underground utilities. My lot is actually on the main road, but I still have access to all of the subdivision amenities. And one of those things is we have a community boat dock because the subdivision ended up being on the river. I had no idea. And the first 20 spaces, first 20 lots had a deeded boat slip that came with it. And I was number 12. So for $1,200, I got just over an acre of land and I still have it. I haven't built anything on it, but it really started my snowball to go into more auctions, buying more land and buying houses and then apartments. And like, so that's how I got started. I was hanging out at an auction.
Wow. Wow. So how do you even find an auction to hang out at? I mean, is there public listings online or how's that work?
Yeah. You go to your Googler and type in real estate auctioneer near me.
And that's it.
That's it. The first thing that'll pop up is auction.com, which is a third-party company that the government uses to sell off their foreclosed houses. I do not recommend that. I do not recommend that. I do not recommend that. Find a local mom and pop auctioneer near you that sells real estate. Every once in a while when you get divorced, the judge will say that this property has to be sold via auction. Every once in a while, when people pass away, their will say that this property has to be sold via auction. Every once in a while, people have to sell really fast and they don't want to put it on the market. They don't want people tromping through their house for 6 months. So they put it up for auction. There's lots of, you know, auctions going on all over the country. You just got to look for it. And I'll tell you, in Indiana, y'all have a ton of auctions, a good auctioneer presence in Indiana.
Yeah, well, I did grow up going to different auctions, but I never really considered that it was could be used towards real estate. So yeah, I'll definitely look into that. So when you made that first deal, I mean, how'd that feel? And like, you know, you eventually said that you went into, you know, buying houses, buying apartments, etc. When did you believe that it was, you know, the one thing that you were gonna leave your 9-to-5 to actually pursue what your mom had always done?
Well, that's what happens when you're an entrepreneur. You do things and you figure out what works and what you like and what makes money and what doesn't. And you just keep going, right? So I just kept going to auctions. The next piece I bought was a half acre piece of industrial land, which is really, really important the way the land is zoned. And I paid $1,500 for it, but I rented the driveway for $250 a month. So in 6 months, I had all my money back. Now I'm making $250 a month with no overhead, no roof, no plumbing, no nothing. I also rent the land now for $500. So I actually get $750 a month off a $1,500 investment.
Wow.
That's pretty flipping good. Everybody would want to do that.
Yeah, no kidding. No kidding. And so, it's just amazing how inexpensive it is. What blows me away.
Yeah, that one was online too. Anybody in the world could have found it. You didn't have to be there in person to bid.
Yeah, there's car sites that are like that, believe it or not. And it's just, my dad's a mechanic and that's the reason I know about stuff like that. But yeah, not having any real estate, you know, real estate investing people in my life until talking to you now. There I go. I now know. Thank you.
So that experience pushed me into houses. And the first house that I ever bought was at auction. And I paid $30,000 for it. It was my entire life savings, everything that I'd ever saved up, because I was flipping furniture off Craigslist. I was going to auctions and buying furniture and then flipping it on Craigslist. Mm-hmm. And then I started buying cars and dump trucks and flipping those, kind of like your dad did, but I didn't like get dirty and mechanic-y and oily.
Right, right.
I just took pictures and flirted with the old guys that came to buy it. So that's how, you know, I saved up a bunch of money and I bought this house. And I started renting it. But again, I was using my mom's strategy, which was just rent it and eventually you'll get your money back. Mm-hmm. But the problem was I found another house that I wanted to buy and I was out of money. So I borrowed all my brother's life savings to buy the second house. And it took us 18 months to flip that second house because we spent all of our money. So then we'd have to go to work to our 9-to-5, save up money. And then every month we'd either go buy stuff at Lowe's or we'd go pay guys to put it in the house. Mm. It took us forever. And after I calculated, I was like, by the time we buy and hold like this and we buy and flip and we buy and rent, and it's going to take 115 years before I can leave my job.
Right. So that kind of leads me to the next question. I mean, what are some things that, you know, you hear or see newbies doing all the time that you're like, yeah, if you would have listened to me, I would have gotten you through that a little bit easier.
Well, both of those houses that I bought started as a for sale by owner sign.
Mm-hmm.
The first house was a for sale by owner sign. I drove by it for 6 months. I didn't know what to do with the FSBO sign. I didn't know that I could talk to them and I could tell them that I would give them, you know, $40,000 if they would let me make them payments. So if they would owner finance it, I could give them more money, right? Mm-hmm. I didn't know that. The second house that I bought was also a for sale by owner sign. And I actually bought it from the owner. I'd figured a couple things out by then. But I also just asked them what their bottom price would be. And they said they'd take $20,000. So I agreed on $20,000. And when we shook hands at closing, they laughed in my face and said, I'm so glad that you bought this. Nobody else would give us nearly this much money. And so again, if I had known to ask for them to take payments, I could have given them $30,000 or $40,000 again, and I wouldn't have had to put all of my money up front and risk all of my life savings. So there's people out there, both of these people had inherited these houses from grandparents, and they just didn't want it. They were just taking whatever they could get for it. If I would have offered them monthly income going towards an actual purchase price, they would have taken it. Because I would have given them more money than what they actually ended up getting.
Right.
And so that's how I started buying houses. After I bought those two, I thought, crap, I'm out of money. Now I can't do this anymore. The only way that I've ever known how to buy houses was with cash. It never crossed my mind to go to a bank. I still don't have any of my houses mortgaged through a bank. But I started to talk to people that had free and clear houses that would let me start giving them money every month. Or people that had a mortgage on their house. And the house was empty. So they were making payments. They were scraping by. And they would let me start making their payments for them. So those two people are all I buy houses from now. People with empty houses that they're making payments on, or inherited houses that they want more than what I'll give them cash.
Yeah, I can relate to both of those situations, actually.
See, it's not that difficult. Like, when I explain it that way, people are like, oh, yeah, I know about eight. No, I probably know 14 or 15 people that would work on.
Yeah,
I know. Even in a hot seller's market, this shit works.
That's awesome. So, we were talking about the website, the auctioneer's website. I mean, how do you, what's the process of finding out what the actual situation is? I mean, are the sellers easy to access, or I mean, what are some of the things that novices, you know, should be looking for when they're kind of starting out?
Well, if you're looking at the auctioneer's website, it's the same as if you were looking at a real estate agent's website. They've already got the contract that the purchase and sale is going to go through them, so they're going to get a commission. So you're not going to get a hold of the seller. I advise all of my people to go find the sellers, find the FSBOs, send out yellow letters, skip the agents. I actually skip the auctioneers now. And I am a real estate agent and an auctioneer. But I skip both of those because most auctioneers, most real estate agents don't understand creative financing. They don't understand the way that I buy houses. And it's more complicated for me to explain it to them than it is to actually get the deals done. So I skip them entirely now.
There's a friend of mine that he actually does something or has tried to tell me something very similar where he looks for houses that are for sale. People are wanting to get out really quickly. He somehow makes a bid for it and then has someone else paying payments. And that blew my mind when I heard it, but it was so complex that, yeah, you're right. I mean, it's just like, even in the people in the industry are like, yeah, I'm not quite sure what you're talking about. But anyway, it's really interesting the different ways that, you know, people can get these deals done. What are some mistakes that you've seen people make when buying their first investment property that, you know, you want to make sure that people avoid?
A lot of times people are selfish. And that's natural. We all really care about ourselves. But when you're talking to sellers, you need to shut up and listen. You need to listen to what their real problem is, because there's a good chance this house is not their problem. You are worried about the house. You are worried about what you're going to offer. You are worried about all the things that you are going to have to do to this house. Mm-hmm. But that seller does not care. That seller is concerned because their kid's getting bullied at school and they want to be able to afford private school. So if you can make arrangements so that you're paying them what private school would cost every month, then the house is just a tool. If your seller is wanting to move because they got a job transfer and they don't want to have to worry about this house, they just want to up and go, then you need to think about how you can help them get out of the house. You don't need to be worried about all these other great and wonderful things. And that's where most people mess up. They are more concerned about their side of the deal than listening to the seller and what the seller's real problem is.
Yeah. Yeah. And what's interesting, I mean, that's just common client awareness, I guess you could say. And
so many people skip it.
Exactly. Exactly. Wow. Huh.
And we're in a relationship economy. If you're not being you and being a person and being somebody that people can confide in and they can trust and they can want to do business in, then you're never going to get any deals. But I mostly coach women, and women, as you know, are fantastic communicators. I mean, we overtalk until we're, you know, going to sleep at night.
Right, right. Yeah. No,
that is the hardest thing for me to tell them is to shut up and listen.
Well, you know, but at the same time, you know, women, when they don't over communicate, and my wife's a good example, when they're just in listen mode can be like the ultimate weapon in sales.
Absolutely.
Just because of the emotional way that they can connect. And it's just like, there's so many different things that I wish I had the skills for that I see in my wife, that, you know, it's like, man, you could be good at this and this. And a lot of times it's just the potential, or it's just them seeing the potential in themselves that is kind of hard to get by, I guess you could say.
And I say this all the time. Women are the best investors for exactly what you just said. We actually want to make a connection with people. We like hanging out and chit-chatting and talking. And when I go on an appointment to buy somebody's house, I'm there for 30 minutes. And 25 of it is me just chit-chatting with them. 5 minutes, we sign the contract. That's it. Because by the time we're friends and we've BFF'd for 25 minutes, they're like, oh yeah, hey, you're here for the house, aren't you? What do you want to give me? You got the paperwork with you? Can we get this done right now? Oh, actually, yes, we can. I'm totally ready. Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. That's so cool. That's so cool.
And that's, you know, guys get a little flustered by that. They're like, you want me to talk to a stranger for 25 minutes? Are you out of your mind?
Well, it's just awkward for most guys to actually hold conversations. I mean, for that long.
I don't know. My husband's pretty good at shutting up and listening. Maybe I've just trained him really well. Who knows?
Maybe. You know, you've negotiated nearly what, 60 real estate deals up to this point. You know, that's generating you $25,000 each month, and that's more than you were making per year at that old 9-to-5 job. You know, that for one, that has to be exciting. You know, I've known a few people with a handful of properties. They've gotten past that initial novice stage. Landlord of mine back in college actually had, I think, 5 properties. You know, if someone wanted to scale something as a little bit more than what they're doing, maybe to do, you know, as large as what you're dealing with, what does that even look like? I mean, do you have like a handful of property managers that deal with all this stuff, or do you keep track of it all on Excel? I mean, what's it even look like at that point?
So when I started buying houses without money and I started doing lease options and owner financing, I would not put any money down to buy these houses, right? Mm-hmm. And I would have 3 months before I had to start making their payments. Well, that would also give me 3 months to see who had the most money they would give me to move into these houses and who would give me the most money every month. So I was getting $10,000, $15,000, sometimes $40,000 for people to move into my houses. And instead of going to Vegas on that, I would save up that money and I would cash out my houses as fast as I could. So I would have my houses free and clear. That way, when the money came in every month, I didn't have a mortgage payment going back out.
Right, right.
So that helps the money situation, right? The other thing is, on my houses, when I sell them, I am selling these houses to buyers who just happen to need to rent for a year or two until they can actually get a mortgage. I don't move regular renters into my houses. These people pay big bucks to go in there, and they get all the rights and responsibilities of pretending to be a buyer until they actually are. So if the toilet gets clogged, I tell them to call a plumber. If the air conditioner don't work, I tell them to call an air conditioner guy. You don't call the bank if you need a light bulb change. You just change light bulbs. So don't call me either. So that's how my houses work. They're self-managed. My accountant goes in on the 14th of every month to see who paid and who's paying late. Otherwise, you know, I might send a text out and be like, I got one lady and I have to text her about every month. And I can hear her on the other side saying, doggone it, I gave my husband that check. I can't believe he didn't put that in the bank again. And sure enough, within 12 hours, the check's in there with the late fee on it. So it's not that difficult. Now, my apartment complexes, those are a different story. That is adult babysitting. And I love and adore my property manager. Those things bring in, one of them brings in $7,000 a month by itself. The other one brings in about $5,200. And then the third one's 600 times three, 1,800. So those themselves almost bring in like $12,000 or $13,000. Just by themselves.
And so we were talking about the auction for single family defined places. I mean, do you find apartments that you can buy the same way, or how would you go about going to that level?
Two of my apartment complexes actually bought out of foreclosure. And the way Tennessee works, we have lots of MLSs, multiple listing services. In Georgia, there's two. You're either in Atlanta or you're in Georgia. But in Tennessee, we probably have 75 different MLSs. So what happened was these apartment complexes went into foreclosure and they're in a county, one county over from Knox County, which is where most of the investors are. But they weren't, the investors weren't looking in the other MLSs. They only look in the Knox County MLS. So this property was on the market for over a year in foreclosure, cash flowing, but in foreclosure. And I happened to be in that county. That's where my honey hole is. And so I'd been talking to the agent. He called me one day and he was like, hey, Whit, the property is going to, we're going to drop the price on Monday. I need you to get an LOI in. And I was like, I don't know what that means. But I happened to be going to apartment training, apartment buying school that weekend. And so I took my little deal and what I had of the numbers and I gave it to the guy that was teaching and he was like, holy crap, this is a really good deal. And so we used our apartment complex as a, you know, a basis all weekend. And I put our LOI in on Monday when I knew what that was. And by Tuesday we were under contract. We closed in 3 months and it's a really cool story, or it's a sad story actually, but this happens all the time. And a lot of these deals do end up at auction. A school teacher who lived in this little community decided that he wanted to become a real estate investor. So he just bought the properties. And then it was during the recession and money was cheap and free and flowing. And he decided that he would flip these properties. So he sank a whole bunch of money into flipping it, whole bunch of money into buying them. And then he did not screen his tenants or verify that they had a job. A legal job, and that they could make their monthly rental payments. So he ended up losing the properties because he had a bunch of crackheads in there not paying him, and that just doesn't work mathematically.
No,
mean, I'm from the public education system in Tennessee, and I can figure that out. So he lost them. A small community bank still owned them, and they hadn't been transferred over to some of the big guys. And so we were able to buy them at a really, really good price, fully rehabbed.
Well, you just got to keep your antennas up, I guess. I mean, it's, and just be smart about it. I mean, that just, it doesn't make, but that doesn't make much sense to me. Just like, what, dude? No, you can't have crackheads, especially putting that much money into something. That's, yeah.
But, you know, people are nice. People aren't trained meanheads like I am. And when somebody says, oh, you know, I had a flat tire, so I can't pay rent, I'll catch up in a couple of weeks. Like, people believe that, and people are like, oh, it's okay. And then they feel bad, and then it happens again and again and again and again. And that's when the fun and exciting and glitzy side of real estate gets pretty ugly.
Mm-hmm.
So I just pretty much start out ugly in the beginning, and then we don't have to go down that route.
I would probably need someone like an enforcer or something to carry that part out, just kind of like hang out in the background. But
and that's fine. That's what, you know, a lot of people have good credit. They've got good money, but they don't want to be involved in the negotiating, or they don't want to be involved in the day to day. They just want their money to make money for them, or they want their credit to make money for them.
Mm-hmm.
And so lots of people partner on apartment deals just like that, and they don't actually have to deal with anything. They let somebody else be the bad guy. I bought a house one time, though, because I was the bad guy. Again, I had nice people. They actually called me. These are the only people that ever called me and said, hey, we've got a house and we want to owner finance it to you. Will you start making us payments in a couple months? Yes. Yes, I will. What's wrong with the house? They were like, nothing. It's totally fine. The problem is, and see, this is where most people start talking and stop listening. They said, the problem is our Sunday school friends' kids live in the house.
Mm-hmm.
And so the kid got knocked up and the baby daddy lost his job. And so these people, the sellers, felt bad. They couldn't kick those kids out with that new baby.
Mm-hmm.
Just because they weren't paying rent. But mean old Whitney could. And so they blamed it on me. They said, hey, we sold this house to Whitney and she says you got to go. It's not us. It's her. She's mean.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Whatever. They let me have the house in August. The people moved out in September. These sellers were so nice to me too. They said, don't worry about making the payments until January. Our taxes are already screwed up this year. So you can just have the house for 5 months without making a payment.
Okay.
Thank you very much. Yes. I appreciate that entirely.
Yeah.
People have problems, though, just like that, that has nothing to do with the money. They just have situations. They have problems. And if you will listen, they will confess all of their real estate sins.
Wow. Really? Being from East Central Indiana, there's just a lot of houses that have just become vacant. And, you know, it's just eventually they just deteriorate and go downhill and have to be taken down. But in the meantime, when they just recently have become vacant, I mean, it's just why not get involved and pick something up like that? So
there's also lots of reasons they go vacant. You know, maybe somebody had to go take care of their sister or their mom for a couple months, and then maybe they just don't come back.
Mm-hmm.
You know, other people get transferred and they don't care about their credit because their job's going to keep moving them around and they don't want to have to deal with an agent. Maybe they weren't even in town long enough to get one. I mean, there's lots of reasons that people don't want houses anymore and they don't care about them. Most people, we think of houses like something that we're like actually attached to. It's home. It's like gives us the warm and fuzzies. We got all these great memories of it. Y'all, this is sticks and bricks strategically placed together.
Yeah.
These things are inventory.
Yeah. Yeah, you're definitely poking at one of my limiting beliefs there because I hear you, and that's what my wife says, but it's just like one of those things that I'm going to have to deal with myself. So
I posted on Facebook one night and my wholesaling guy friends thought this was hilarious. And I'm not a wholesaler. I like monthly cash flow. But I said that houses are like hookers. They're just there for the money, so don't fall in love.
Wow. That's nice. I like that.
And it's true. It's true. It is so true. And, you know, my ladies have a hard time with that because when they go in and look at a house, they immediately start nesting in it. I'm like, are you moving into this? Well, no. Okay, how much money are you going to make from this? Oh, well, I haven't calculated that. Man, you plan putting drapes up. You plan painting the walls. You're going to flip this and that. It doesn't need any of that. It's there to make you money.
Mm-hmm.
Focus.
And that's usually the problem is that people, you know, they get emotionally attached to all kinds of different things. So
you can't be like that.
Yeah.
I get emotionally attached to those little green dollar bills coming into my account. Otherwise, I don't care where they come from.
How does someone find, you know, something that isn't necessarily overpriced? I mean, do you have a process of finding the good deals that you can kind of shed a little bit of light on or what?
Yep. First thing we got to do is find a honey hole, which is where we go to make the money, honey. It's maybe a 1 square mile area that you just dominate. Or, you know, mine, I'm out in the country, so it's about 10 or 15 square miles. And actually, my honey hole looks more like a finger than a hole. So it follows a 4-lane highway. 1 mile off this 4-lane highway for about 5 miles, I'll buy anything and everything. Mm. So once you find where you can get in and get your deals done and make a lot of money, honey, then we start talking about these sellers. Then we start talking about, we're looking for tired landlords. We're looking for people who've inherited properties. We're looking for people that got a job transfer. We're looking for divorces. We're looking for, people that are just going through life. Mm. And this house has become a monster situation. And a lot of times these houses are pretty. These houses are nice. These are houses we would move into. I'm not talking about little dinky crack houses. I'm talking about nice stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You just got to find the right sellers in your honey hole. And you can buy as many houses as you want to, because then, you know, when you send out your letters, you send them to a targeted area. You send out bandit signs. Everybody in town knows your name. You wear a button around town that says, I buy houses. And people are like, oh, you must be Whitney. Yep. You know, start telling people, because I don't know if you know this or not, but at least in East Tennessee, these rednecks like to talk. And once you help one seller, they're going to tell everybody they know in the same situation that you'll come by their house to.
Yep.
Word of mouth is still the number one form of advertising. And that's it. Then you just write as many contracts as you can stand. My limit is 7. I can never have more than 7 houses that I'm trying to rent out at a time, mm-hmm. or I really am cranky.
Yeah, I could see that. That's for sure. So what do you got going on in the future that you're excited about?
Oh, I just got a speaking engagement for Inman Connect in San Francisco in July. I'm super duper excited about that, because my whole mission in life is to especially help women understand that they need investment houses. They need passive income. And the more stages, the more podcasts, the more people that I can say, hey, it's not that complicated to get into real estate investing, then the easier it is for me to get my message out to the world.
Mm.
So that you're not paying agents for things that you could do yourself, so that you're not, oh, Lord help us, giving the mortgage brokers, the banks, and the government more money than they need, and so that you can actually help people to people, you can buy houses.
Yeah. Well, and you've made it sound so tremendously not hard to get into, so yeah.
I'm not going to say it's easy, but it is simple.
Yeah, simple. There we go. That's the word I was looking for. That's exciting. And going into the whole, will that be one of your first speaking engagements? Or, I mean, is that something that you've already come across and done? Or?
Yeah, I've been doing that. I love it. I go to a lot of women's empowerment.
Okay.
Saturday workshops and things. Mm-hmm. And I've been the keynote speaker quite a few times. I've been on a couple different panels, but this is my first big national conference.
Gotcha. Well, if anybody's listening and they want to bring you on as a speaker, she's vetted. She has.
I'm totally game.
Yes. Cool. So next segment is the rapid fire question segment. One of the favorite segments of the show. First one, and this is the one I really like. What are 3 influencers or teachers that have launched you to where you're at today?
I absolutely adore Jen Sincero. She is an author in like New Mexico or something, but she speaks to women, and she has 2 books, You're a Badass and You're a Badass at Making Money. And I just love those books. Another lady that I absolutely adore, and she's passed, but her name is Martha Berry. Mm-hmm. And in like 1902, she started teaching the mountain kids in North Georgia how to read and write and wash their hands, and like started giving them an education for free. And then it flourished into Berry College, which is the largest land campus in the world. There's not a university or a college in the entire world with more land than Berry College, with 1,500 students in North Georgia.
Wow.
I love her. She hung out with like Henry Ford's wife. She hung out with one of the Roosevelt's wives. She hung out with a lot of big players throughout early, you know, 1900s history.
Right. Yeah.
But she's nowhere to be seen. She's totally under the radar, and she was a powerhouse.
Yeah. Yeah. And those people are always so cool too. Here in Indiana, we have the Ball brothers of Muncie, and they're the ones that Ball State's named after. And if you're familiar with mason jars, they're the people that started, you know, they have Ball.
Awesome.
And so that was their company. That's how they got Ball State going. And that family is still lingering around Muncie, Indiana. And there's still some houses, some mansions up from back then. But one of the stories that was really interesting to me is that, you know, they could be in Paris a week and then they'd come back home to Muncie and they'd be like in everyday clothes and you wouldn't be able to tell them different than anybody else.
Well, that's the thing that I would tell everybody also about real estate investors. People think real estate investors, I mean, if I say real estate investor, who do you think of? Donald Trump?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right. We don't look like him. We don't all talk like him or think like him. I look like a regular 33-year-old stepmom.
Hmm.
I don't look like a real estate investor, I don't think. But your private money partners also wear overalls and drive a 1985 Ford pickup truck. They like millionaires, you know, that's the that's one of my favorite quotes is the object is to be rich, not look rich.
Mm-hmm. Totally. Totally. You got any others?
Other mentors?
Yeah.
I have a friend, April Crosley, in Pennsylvania, and she buys money with other people's money. She does private money, and we have a program together. She's actually one of my very favorite people to follow. She flips houses, like actually really flips houses.
Mm-hmm. Cool, cool. What's something that's going on right now that you think is going to affect entrepreneurship or you real estate investing and in the future that you're excited about?
I really think it's all about relationships. It's all about a relationship economy. Everything moves so fast, but at our heart, we want to make a connection with somebody. We don't want to just be sold. We don't want to be pitched. We don't want to feel like somebody's taking advantage of us. We want to actually become partners and like learn and grow and do something together. That's why, you know, coaches are on the rise because people don't want to go to college and learn from somebody that doesn't have any experience. We want to pay right? somebody that's actually been through the trenches and came out on top of the mountaintops.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
So the more you can be you, and that's really hard, especially for a weirdo like me, but the more you can be you and tell your story and realize that other people have very similar stories and that you can help them achieve their goals. That's where entrepreneurship is going.
That's powerful and totally right. Yeah, it's and the more I think that the more you're aligned to having that personal mission and doing it because it gives you fulfillment and helping other people versus just doing it for the dollar. I mean, I think that's right in there with what you were saying. So
you got to focus on what you're giving. You got to be giving, giving, giving all the time. Don't focus on what you're getting or you'll starve.
Mm-hmm.
You give, 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 give. You cannot outgive God.
Touché. Very true. What issue do you believe people ought to be talking about yet hardly anybody is?
I want to talk about why there's not more women in real estate. If you go to a real estate seminar or a boot camp, it's a bunch of boring old white guys talking to a bunch of boring old white guys. Where are the women? We're going to live longer. You and I both know we spend more money than men.
Mm-hmm.
And we're better investors. So why are women not seeking real estate investing as another source of income or as their primary income?
Are there like local chapters of realty investing clubs that people can look into to get started? Or
yeah, totally. There's a National Real Estate Investors Association. There's lots of meetups. There's lots of Facebook groups. There's lots of places where women can go and actually be around other women who are doing real estate, but you have to hunt for them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's. Yeah, it can be a little tricky sometimes, especially when you're not quite exactly sure what to look for. But I think with what you've been able to share with me today, I think people are going to be able to get on the right path. What is one thing you believe that all high school students must know?
They have to know how to buy a house.
Mm.
They have to know that it might be in their best interest to buy a duplex for $100,000 instead of a starter home for $100,000. Most people think, oh, I don't want a duplex. Then I'm going to have neighbors. Yeah, but your neighbors pay your mortgage for you. Hello?
Yeah.
If you get a triplex, now they're paying your cable and your Netflix and your water bill. Hello? If you get a quadplex, and you can buy, I bought a triplex for $89,000. I bought a five unit for $125,000. So buying multi-units is not any more expensive than buying a regular single family house. But the money is times three and times five and times 11.
Yeah, that when I heard Robert, I was talking about him at the beginning of the conversation. When he talked, he was on a show, like, I don't know, early 2000s, mid 2000s somewhere, and he shared that idea. My mind was blown away, and people don't think about it that way. They really don't. So yeah, that's good stuff.
Absolutely.
What's it mean to live a life of abundance?
A life of abundance is being thankful that you've got another day, that you've got a stream of appointments to go to, that you've got a packed calendar. Being grateful creates abundance. And abundance is literally all around you. You can just look out on the yard. How many specks of grass are out there? Who knows? How much money is out there in the world? Who knows? It's an abundant planet.
Right.
And when you focus on the little bitty slice that you have, then that's all you're going to have. But when you open your eyes and realize that there's this and there's that and there's this and there's that, and you could do all these great things, then you realize how truly abundant this earth is.
Yeah.
And it's a renewable resource. People act like when they spend money, it's never going to come back. Yeah, it is. Hopefully times 10.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Spend it, baby.
Powerful. I love it. I love it. Well, Whitney, thank you so much for spending some time with me today.
This has been great, JC. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it was great having you on. You can be found all over the web using Whitney Nicely. Just Google her. She can find
Whitney
her.
Like Houston, Nicely like Nicely Done.
There you go. And so Facebook, you're on Instagram. Did I miss anything?
YouTube.
I
got like 700 videos on YouTube.
Oh, wow. Cool. I'll definitely have to check those out. So
subscribe,
hit like, all those other things. Cool. Well, again, Whitney, thank you so much for coming on and helping break through some limiting beliefs that I had, and I'm sure some of our listeners have had today. So it was great. Thank you.
All right. Good stuff. Thank you.
Well, so there you have it, gang. Lots of value there if you've been wondering how to get started with real estate investing. You know, I think it's amazing that you can get started with just a few thousand bucks at an auction. You know, I'm proud to share that I've been already taking her advice and attended my first REI Association meeting here in Indy. And my next move is to find and attend an auction and get a feel for those as well. I think real estate investing is a great opportunity that everyone should consider, especially if you're just out of school and might just have a few thousand dollars of play money that you weren't necessarily getting when you were still in school. If you're wanting to take this conversation to the next level, I have a few extras from Whitney's YouTube channel you might enjoy over on the show notes. They can be found at newinceptions.com/123. In our conversation today, we spoke about all kinds of strategies for people who are just getting started. However, that might have been a lot of info to throw at you guys. So the first video is all for us visual learners who want to get a better feel for some of the topics she discussed in today's chat. She also made it no secret that women are great real estate investors. And so the second video is one where she goes into full detail on why. And if you have some ladies in your life that, you know, might want to do something outside of their current day job or business, be sure to share it with them. I mean, it might give them a little insight and what they can expect in the real estate investing world and might push them towards actually getting started. Whitney also has a few interviews on her channel, and in the third video, she talks with Monica Sawyer about blissful buy and holds. It's a really interesting conversation about how to make sure you do your due diligence before you get into buying a rental property. And finally, If you've liked what you've heard today and want to know more, then you might be happy to hear that Whitney has her own course called First Deal Done Fast. And in this fourth video, she tells you all about it and what you could expect from working with her. So that's it, guys. The next session, session 124, Harrison and I play host to another real estate investor. His name is Kevin Bupp, and like Whitney, he has a different perspective on real estate than a lot of folks I've met. In fact, over his career, he's been involved in all kinds of real estate, and today his business focuses on a very unique choice of real estate properties, mobile home parks. Yeah, you heard me right. Yeah, that made me raise an eyebrow too. So if you're already in the REI world and you know you've been thinking, hey, maybe buying an apartment complex is our next move, you might want to hear this conversation with AJ. He'll give you some insights into why he's opted for investing in these parks and choosing them over others. Our 23 guys, don't forget, if you feel that you're an expert at something like those we have on the show, find out how to get your message out there by getting the free book Expert Secrets by Russell Brunson. Just head on over to newinceptions.com/expertsecrets and just pay shipping and handling. Again, that's newinceptions.com/expertsecrets. So that said, guys, thanks for joining Whitney and myself today. And until next session, dig in, have fun, and take care in whatever you're creating. And we'll see you back here next time.
Thanks for listening to the Angles of Latitude podcast. Connect with us at home, at work, or on the go at facebook.com/newinceptions, on Twitter at newinceptions, Instagram at new.inceptions, and on the web at newinceptions.com.